I wish I had started sooner.
Oh yeah,
100%.
exactly.
So to anybody else that's listening to your episode right now, that's on the fence, or not sure that's right for them, or not sure how to get started, go do it.
Welcome back, wealthy women, to our Women Creating Wealth podcast. You know, every week we talk to people who have in some way, shape, or form created wealth for themselves through real estate investing. And today is no different. Today we have Becky Nova, the Becky Nova, as her Instagram says. She is the founder of Lady Landlords. And that is, I think, a place where some of us are afraid to go. So, Becky, thanks so much for being with us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
So how did you, you might as well like start at the beginning, because I know that a lot of people, and not just women, but a lot of women, are the idea of being a landlord is a little scary. And, you know, it's like there's like two visions. One is like, it's 2 a.m, you're sound asleep and someone calls you and says, yeah, my toilet's backing up. And you're like, oh man. And the other one is that the person isn't paying their rent and you knock on the door and this like 6'8" person with lots of hair opens the door and you're like, ugh, you know, like, oh, honey, could you please pay your rent? You know, so that was, I think those are like two visions that women are a little bit afraid of. How did you get started in this, and kind of, did you have those fears? And if so, how did you overcome them?
Sure. So I hate telling people how I got into being a landlord, because I have to admit that my husband was right in this story. So it's always hard for me to really be able to tell here. But what happened was, so my background is actually in cancer research. I worked in the professional corporate America for many years in pharmaceuticals. I had got really kind of dismayed with that whole industry and moved over to Europe for quite a few years, lived there, used to own a tour company, used to have a restaurant that I own there, but unfortunately made a really bad business decision with that bar over in Portugal. And I moved back to the United States. At that point in time, though, I met my now husband. His name's Emilio, and he had just immigrated from the Dominican Republic to New York. Very much wanted that American dream, wanted that homeownership, wanted the white picket fence and everything like that. But I said, well, we live in New York. This is an expensive place. I just got myself out of the debt from my business in Europe that had failed. I don't want to be in a place where I'm going to live paycheck to paycheck. So I came up with what I thought was the best idea ever that nobody else had ever thought of, which was to buy a multifamily, live in one side, rent out the other, and help offset our mortgage costs from that property, therefore making us landlords. I had grown up in a multifamily house, and I saw my grandmother, kind of the OG lady landlord, if you will. So I had seen that. When I was in college, I kind of made some extra money, rent subletting the extra rooms in the townhouse that I had rented. But I didn't even think about those when I first started. But it was just something that I really said, we still want to live in New York for the time being. How else am I able to not pay so much money for a mortgage every single month?
Yeah, and that is, you're right. That's unique. I mean, whoever thought of that? But it's perfect, right? It's a great way to get started. And it's okay that you leveraged your husband, because our motto is, you know, who, not how, right? We don't have to do every single thing ourselves. And that right. is the way that we can maximize our resources. And like, I'm bringing in anybody, right? Anybody who happens to wander by, like, hey, will you help me move this thing or whatever?
Exactly. Yeah, he's really good at picking up and moving heavy boxes. So yeah, that has always become his responsibility. But exactly, it was something that we didn't realize, that buying a multifamily, we didn't know that that was a strategy. We didn't know that that was a thing. We were just looking for, what can we do to not have to pay the high cost of living in New York City?
Right, exactly. And then how did that turn into being the lady landlord? I'm assuming you're not the lady landlord with one property.
Right. So we, once again, this was just supposed to be the way that we were going to buy our own owner-occupied property. But I'll never forget being at the closing table with that first property, that first duplex that we bought. And they actually gave me money back right then and there at that closing table for the tenants that were already living in the house. And I was like, well, I just gave you guys a whole bunch of money and you're already giving me a check back on day one. And I said at the closing table, oh my God, we've got to do this again. Now, meanwhile, everybody else there was like, no, Becky, that's not how this works. You can't buy another property right now. You just spent all your money here. That's not, we can't, nobody's going to approve you for another mortgage. Everybody thought I was nuts. But I walked out of that room being like, I think we hit on something here. I think there is an opportunity for us to be able to really change kind of our financial future with real estate investing. So I walked out of there with this complete goal of figuring out how I can buy the next one. And I've probably never had so many doors slammed in my face at that point in time. I felt like I was listening to like every podcast. I was listening to, reading every book I can, going to every networking event that I could, trying to figure out what this process could be and how I could buy another property. And I was overwhelmed, confused. I felt more lost than I even did at the beginning when I knew nothing. And then I kind of realized, why am I recreating a wheel of something that I already know works? So was able to actually get then approved for next mortgage, ended up buying a now four family and a parking lot, which for those of us in New York is a very, very big deal, but bought a parking lot a year to the day from the first property. The exact same day. I was in the exact same attorney's office with the exact same lender, the exact same realtor. And we did that all again on the exactly 365 days later.
So, and a lot of people ask the question, how am I going to get the down payment for the second property, right? How am I going to, you know, where's that money going to come from? I can't save up that much in a year. So talk about that process.
Sure. So the whole point of living in that multifamily, right? House hacking, as it tends to be known as, where you live in one unit and rent another unit, is the whole idea to really offset your costs. So in New York, being able to do that, that is huge. I was paying $2,000 a month for a studio, and that was a decade ago. I can't even imagine what it would be like to be able to sit on your bed, see your toilet, and cook at the exact same time. I can't even imagine what they charge for that these days, but I was paying $2,000 a month. So when my husband and I then moved into this duplex, now we already had that rental income coming in from that other unit, but my husband and I still decided to pay that market rent for that unit. So we put that into our own little nest egg. So now we were already making money from that unit. The other unit, the tenants we had actually covered the full mortgage. So I actually did not have to pay anything to actually live. I was already making, I think it was like $300 a month just by living there. But my husband and I continued to pay as if, once again, maybe not as much as that studio apartment, now that we were living together, but really that market rent for that place. So within a few months, definitely by once again, the time the year came around, I had the down payment for another rental property. And it didn't feel like I was saving. It didn't feel like I had to scrimp or eat ramen for months to be able to do it, because I was actually still putting in less money than I would have if I was paying for what my rent had been at that previous time.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits if you can start off with a property that you're actually living in, because then, right, you're like, I'm paying myself. Hey, this is great, right? I'm fattening my own purse by living here.
Right. So that's what we've always been able to do for that. And then moving forward with other down payments, it was really just now the proceeds of the properties that we made on our rentals, in addition to the fact that we live for free. That we get paid to live.
So did you even better? Yeah, even better. Exactly. So did you continue on the anniversary to keep buying one property each year?
Tried.
Okay, here we are again.
I've tried. We've actually been able to buy. We bought at least one multifamily every single year since we started investing in 2018. And then honestly, there's been some years. They bought properties in this year, which then you felt like we were
at Becky, you're breaking up a little bit on that one. So maybe you could just repeat that. Sorry.
Sure. Let me go back to where I was. Okay. So I've actually been able to purchase at least one multifamily every single year since we started and getting invested in real, since we started investing in real estate back in 2018. So every year we bought at least one, but what's been great is that there's been some years we've actually been able to buy now more than one property, one more than one multifamily in the same year, just by kind of going with that same model of consistently using our profits for then that next property. So now, what is it? It'll be 6 years later now, now in 2024, and we have over 16 properties.
Excellent. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you.
And what do you think is the, I guess, what are some secrets, or some, they won't be secrets once you divulge them, but some of the ways that you are being successful as a landlady, because you're not obviously having somebody else manage them, I'm assuming, or you wouldn't be teaching people how to be landlords, right?
Right. We self-manage all of our properties. I think for me, one of the most important things was that I started systemizing my rentals at the very beginning. I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, I only have one, I have two, I have three, and I don't need to kind of think about it. But I ran my, even that property in my own house, in my duplex, I ran that one unit as if I had the 16 already. That was something that I made sure that I had my LLC organized. I knew I had a property management company set up, which was then the name that was on the lease, so that it wasn't specifically my name that was on the lease. So if I wanted to be like, well, you got to talk to that horrible property manager, she's always tells you no, I can kind of, that wasn't exactly my name on there, right? Yeah. I started to do that. I started to make sure that I had my ads ready to go, that I understood the marketing for properties. I started to create a folder for every single property. So that way I knew, I kind of had like my little fact sheet. So I knew when I bought it, where my mortgage was going to, what plumber was I had used before, what person I liked for as a handyman, who I didn't, where my pictures were, where my ads were. So then that way, if it didn't matter if I had one or four or 24, it was still a similar process. And I was minimizing my time while increasing my income on that property.
Yeah. And that's what I've seen in anybody really who's been successful in real estate investing. They've had systems. They've had some, no matter what aspect of real estate investing, they've got the system, and that is, you know, reproducible time and time again. And that makes life easy. And it does, it sets you up for success. Absolutely.
Right. I now live out of the United States for half of the year. I get to go travel, and I still manage my properties from anywhere in the world because I can do everything from my phone.
Isn't that nice?
Right. So it's, you know, this is, we're in the age of technology for sure. Let's utilize the options that we have to really minimize our time. And I think systemizing has really been a key to not worrying about those calls in the middle of the night, to not being freaked out when all of a sudden you have a vacancy, to knowing exactly what you're going to do when you have a tenant that's not paying you rent. All of those things I think have been made so much easier when you really put those right systems into place.
Yeah. So have you had throughout the years, have you had like a sort of a nightmare scenario that, you know, you think, oh, okay, note to self, don't ever do this again.
We've had a lot of nightmare situations. I mean, that's what's interesting. I really consider being a landlord in a customer service business.
Yeah.
I really do. I might own the house, but it's my tenant's home. And I really feel very strongly about that is something that my role is to provide, not just four walls, but four clean, safe walls where people can really feel comfortable to make it their home. So because of that, there absolutely are situations. What I always find interesting is kind of those little like ethical debates about kind of how to manage certain situations that come up that you would just never put in a lease. So definitely not a nightmare situation. But one of the early on situations that occurred for us with one of the first properties is we had a new tenant that had moved in, and she called us saying that the closet rod, as she was unpacking, just snapped in half and broke. She's like, well, I need a new closet rod. And we were sitting there being like, well, did she, and she actually rented a two bedroom for the sole purpose of making one room a closet, right?
Wow.
So we knew she clearly had a lot of clothes and was bringing in, especially in New York. I was very impressed by that. But she clearly had a lot of clothing, a lot of things to be putting in that closet. So then we kind of were like, well, did the closet rod break because she put so much clothing on it that it was really a tenant fault for snapping it? Or was it literally the structural integrity of the closet rod that we had actually kind of bought, right?
Yeah.
Once again, not nightmare scenario. We're talking about like $25 for a closet rod. I'm going to spend $25 to keep a tenant happy.
Right.
But it was just one of those things that we were sitting there being like, that's an interesting thing to like call your landlord on. Like, is that from a responsibility perspective, is that really on us that we should be taking care of that? Or is that really kind of like tenant's fault? Like I said, we're not going to deal with something like that over, you know, $25. But it started to bring up this idea that there's a lot of kind of those things that you really have to kind of decide, like, what type of landlord do you want to be? There are absolutely landlords out there that are going to say, no, that tenant overloaded that closet rod. Why should I come out of pocket for that? So yes, I will absolutely get it for them. But not only am I going to charge for the closet rod, but also the delivery charge, also the mileage to go to the Home Depot to go pick that up, the time of the person to do so, right? All those things versus being on the other side that says, hey, for $25, I can get this tenant that's paying me great money that is renting a 2-bedroom with only one person in it. I think I can spend the $25, right? And we all get to make those decisions in our business. We are the CEOs of our rental property. But I just always thought it was really interesting to see what kind of things fell in kind of that ethical kind of debate line. My nightmare tenant, he was interesting. He was probably the most qualified tenant we've ever had. Highest credit score, lowest debt to income ratio, highest income hands down. Just on paper, references, job, everything fantastic. He was moving into one of our properties on the third floor of that quadplex that I had mentioned. He was moving in there, and it was going to be him, his wife, and his 3 young boys. Well, move-in day, we get a call from the tenant below him that calls and says, hey, just so you know, it wasn't us. And we're like, what? And she's like, the damage. And I'm like, well, what damage? And she's like, you haven't seen it? And we're like, no, what are you talking about? She's like, you might want to come over. So I don't know if you remember the movie Hook from years ago about Peter Pan.
Yeah.
A great, great movie if you ever get the opportunity with Robin Williams. But there's a scene where Hook walks up a staircase and he drags the hook all the way up the walls up to the top bedroom where he goes and kidnaps Peter Pan's kids, right? Well, our new tenant decided to be too cheap to hire movers when he had all of this stuff that he was moving in. And he recreated that scene for us going up to the third floor where he just did damage all 3 floors, every single wall, somehow he even knocked down a light fixture. We still can't even put a hole in the ceiling. We can't even figure out how he had done that. So we went and talked to him and we're like, hey, so damage on day one, we got to talk about that. And he came back with 2 rather interesting arguments. First one was, well, I don't owe money for that because I'm renting the apartment. I'm not renting the stairwell. Okay. But how would you get up here? So I reminded him, you know, the lease does make it clear, you know, the premise, it has other words to make sure it's the entire being of that multifamily, not just inside his unit. So I said, well, you know, how else would you expect to kind of get up here if you didn't go through the stairwell? And he's like, oh, I meant to talk to you about that. You know, I have 3 little kids. I'm going to need you to put in an elevator. This is a New York City townhouse built in the 1800s. Where we put in this elevator, huh? Where we put in this elevator? You knew it was third floor. You saw it was third floor. Where are we putting this? So we then try to explain to him, you know, no, sorry, you are responsible for this. And he's like, okay, we'll take it out of my deposit. And I'm like, no. This is day one. You just moved in. This eats up. There is no deposit. So therefore, you actually need to pay for that. Deposit is only to be used after move out. So that's not something that we're going to be able to use now. We are going to now invoice you for that. So we had to come up with a payment plan. And every month he's still, I think we broke it up into like two or three payments at that time, because he did just pay first month's rent, security, all that, just moved. He was moving states. No, once again, goodwill was something that we were going with. So we decided to give him a little bit of a bandwidth to that. And still just the his understanding of why this was his responsibility was just, that was my first indicator that this might not work out so great with that tenant. We had a couple other times that he would call me, was just like, oh, my stove is dirty. Great. How did it get dirty? Well, my wife was cooking on it. And so my response back to him was, if you would like, I'm happy to send you the phone number of some cleaning ladies. And he was so offended, because he was like, my wife, I make good enough money that my wife doesn't have to work, and that's why she can take care of the house. And I'm like, well, then I guess she should be cleaning that stove now, shouldn't she? So he ended up moving out early, which was fantastic. Luckily, he moved out right before the pandemic, left the place an absolute disaster. Everything 4 feet and below was covered with pen, crayon, boogers from the kids. And that was just a mess. But we ended up taking him to small claims, won our case, and actually he paid us back every single penny that he owed us.
Wow. Amazing, huh?
Right. What that means is, all because you have a high salary and a good credit score does not mean you have common sense.
That's for sure. Exactly. What, I have to clean my own stove? What kind of a world is this? That's ridiculous.
That's not something a landlord does. I'm confused. Right.
Yeah. Funny story, real quick. When I was at one of the properties I was managing at one time, it was, you know, change of clocks. I'm going to go in and change all the batteries in the smoke detector. And I'm walking in and I can hear it from the ground floor. I can hear this beep, you know, and then long time later, you hear the other beep. It's just starting to be bad. And I'm saying, which apartment is this? You know, why didn't they tell me that they were having this problem? I finally get to the right unit. And I said to him, and he was home. And I said, hey, you know, I want to change the batteries in your smoke detector. And I said, you know, I'm surprised you didn't call me. And he goes, oh, that's what that is? He says, oh, it was driving me crazy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But even not even to inquire about that, not even to be like, hey, there's this beeping noise. Exactly. What do you think it is?
When I got there, he was wearing headphones. I don't know if that's why.
Probably.
Wearing them to block out the sound. Long, like, they're torturing me.
One of my other favorite calls I got from a tenant, fantastic tenant. She's been with us for years. Never calls, never has an issue. Would, as I say this now here. But no, absolutely fantastic tenant. So when she called me, I was very surprised, because that's also an understanding that phone calls are for emergencies. We set up a system so that way one has everything. We set up a system where we can really understand to triage maintenance requests or things that need to be handled versus emergency. So when she called, that to me signifies it's an emergency. She never calls. So I was like, I got to answer this immediately. Becky, there's a bug in the house. There's a bug in the house. You need to call an exterminator. We got a bug in the house. And I'm like, okay, got you.
A bug?
What type of bug? What type of bug would this be? I don't know. And I'm thinking, you know, most people, especially in New York here, I'm thinking cockroach. I'm thinking something like that.
Yeah.
No. We got a mosquito. It's flying around the house. Oh my God. Like, it's in my kitchen. And I'm like, okay. It's a mosquito. Like, we got this. Where is it now? And she goes, oh, well, it flew out the window. And I was like, the window's open? She's like, yeah. I had to open the window and pull up the screen. So I'm like, so the bug went back out the window? She's like, yeah, it's out. I'm like, okay, close the screen. And she's like, oh, yeah. Okay, close the screen. And I'm like, anything else I could do for you today? She's like, no. I'm good now.
Well, hey, oh, there's a lot of on your property that you never had a bug up till then.
Absolutely. But she just went over the deep end there. I thought it was absolutely hysterical. It was one of my like favorite calls with her. You know, she keeps a very clean house. We like to also support that from, you know, the way that we manage our houses as well. So when she called me, you know, we were so concerned about like what this bug was. And then she, when I realized she had the window open and a mosquito flew in, I was like, okay, we can fix this here. We can fix this.
You got a vacuum cleaner? Suck that baby up.
Right. I was like, we can walk you off the ledge. It's going to be
Yes,
okay here.
exactly.
But you know, once again, if talking to her for that, you know, 90 seconds keeps her paying rent every month and keeps her happy in apartment year after year, you know what? I'll take a bug call every 3 years. That's fine by me. I can
Not
do
a
that.
problem. I mean, go over and
Yeah.
swat the thing for you. It's okay.
Right. For that, exactly.
So what are some things that you've managed to discover throughout the time that help you to get good tenants in there? Because I know that's always a concern that people have.
I'm sorry, can you say your question again?
Sure. Yeah. It's just throughout the years, have there been guidelines or tips or tricks that you've used to help you to get those good tenants? You know, things that you've sort of discovered throughout your tenure.
One of the first things that I always do when I have a listing is I make that process to get to a showing and an application. I make that very clear and I lay out what those instructions look like. To me, if you can't follow instructions before you move in, you're probably not when you move in, right? You're in that desperate position as an applicant trying to secure housing. You're going to do probably is a little bit better than you normally would once you actually know that you have a home. So if you can't follow instructions from the very beginning, we're probably not going to be a fit for each other. So I make it very clear that I'm able to, I give them a, when people inquire about the property, I give them a pre-screening questionnaire to complete. Simple, I think there's probably 5, 6, 7 questions on there. Those couple questions, same thing. If I know, I can tell if you didn't read the question, right? If I'm like, what is your name? And you're like, 7. I'm like, okay,
bad
we're already
sign.
Not starting off here on a great foot. Right. So I can really tell by, so one, you actually have to complete the pre-screening questionnaire. If you don't, then we just kind of are over there. So I'm not wasting my time even with people that aren't going to be a fit. But otherwise, I can then look through that pre-screening questionnaire, which really tells me if you read my advertisement. A lot of what my pre-screening questionnaire is kind of confirming reading comprehension. Did you see that we're going to do a credit check? Do you understand that here in New York, we happen to have a lot of railroad bedrooms, meaning that those bedrooms are attached? You have to go through one bedroom to get to the next bedroom. Not everybody's okay with that. Those are things that I'm not going to show you an apartment if you aren't okay with that living situation.
Yeah.
So we put those in the pre-screening questionnaire. One, it already checks if you actually read our ad, and then two, if you actually are qualified. Then I invite only those that are actually qualified to showings. Showings, I usually do open house style, but I assign times to people. Okay. I want to get to talk to the people that are going to be there. I want to make sure to answer all of your questions and show you around and make sure that you have the understanding you need for that property. So I don't want 50 people there all at the same time. I also like to see if we agreed that you're going to show up at 5 o'clock, if you actually show up at 5 o'clock. Are you the type of person that's going to call me telling me that you're running late? Or are you the person that's just never going to respond? Or then 2 days later be like, hey, I'm here now. And be like, great. Well, we were supposed to meet on Tuesday. Yeah. So I'm not there now. Right. So same thing. It's really just kind of a check for, is this person going to be responsible? Are they able to follow instructions? Because when I give you my 10-page lease, well, if you couldn't answer the 5 questions on a pre-screening questionnaire and show up for the showing at the time that you chose, probably 10 pages of the do's and don'ts of a property probably aren't really going to be working for you.
Yeah.
So I found that to be really kind of important to lay out what that instruction process looks like early on. So then people have one, they can understand what they're going to be expected to do, which I think is also what a lease tells a person to do as well. But yeah. I feel like when you really lay out that pre-screening, people actually disqualify themselves so much more when you give them the opportunity to do exactly that.
Exactly. So true. How important is credit score
so
to
that's
you?
Really, credit score, I'm actually pretty light on credit score, I would say overall. I think it also depends kind of what your applicant pool also looks like. Most of my rental properties are probably somewhere in a C range.
Okay.
Right. I usually kind of like buying in like a C, C plus that I feel like is going to appreciate into more of that B minus kind of area within a 5 to 10, 10 year range. That's usually what I look for. A lot of people in that area, I mean, they're going to get younger students that maybe don't have great credit. Maybe they just graduated college, so they have a lot of student debt. Medical debt is something that, you know, as somebody that once again has worked in the pharmaceutical industry for 15 years, medical debt's something I absolutely understand. So I feel like it's really important, not just the number, but to actually have an understanding of what that credit score is really telling you. I think that's kind of important. Once again, you know, living especially in New York, where public transportation is something that is very, very viable and something very easy to use, I'm sure, compared to other states. But if you have a car that is 50% of your annual salary and you are making sure to make your car payments, but yet your phone, your electric, your gas, those things aren't being paid, but you're afraid that the car that you don't actually need is being repoed, and that's where you're getting dinged on your credit, I'm probably going to look at that a little bit more harshly. You know, I do set like what my minimum is, because you have to consider all applicants against a standard.
Right.
But when I look at credit scores, I am much more understanding of certain situations like student debt, especially in America, compared to why are we not paying our electric bill?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands what you just said about, you know, like a C property, B property. Can you just explain that? And especially in your case, it sounds like you're talking about that has a lot to do with location versus the condition of the property. So could you just talk a little bit more about that and make sure everyone understands it?
Absolutely. So when people talk about properties through a lettered scale, usually A, B, C, and D, what we're talking about there is really that location itself. Now, there is absolutely nothing that you're ever going to see on the MLS that tells you this is an A property and this is a C property. Realtors also are not going to give you that information, but it's really something that is really based on the eye of the beholder. So what could be an A neighborhood compared in your mind, Chris, compared to what I would consider an A neighborhood could be a little bit different. So usually your A neighborhoods are more of your single family properties, areas that are going to be probably higher income earners. People that are going to be mostly homeowners are probably going to be in that areas, really kind of like your top areas. I picture, you know, very manicured lawns where everybody has, you know, a pool in the backyard and a security gate in the front. That's what I picture personally when I think of an A neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
B neighborhood is in kind of that step below, probably still good income earners, probably making probably 50, 60K plus in that space, probably a little bit more family oriented. People that are really looking kind of for those good schools, can't afford, you know, the top private schools, but people that are probably looking for just good, safe neighborhoods. I always kind of relate that to the place that you want to go trick-or-treating. That's just kind of what I think about, those types of neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Class C neighborhoods are probably a little bit more renters than you would necessarily find homeowners. People that probably a little bit lower incomes, maybe start thinking some more of jobs that don't necessarily require master degrees and above, probably things. I mean, once again, I think these days everything does, you know, it requires a bachelor degree, but probably things that are going to be maybe a little bit more in those shift work categories, a little bit of a lower income kind of bracket, whether you're going to find more renters than you necessarily would find homeowners, probably find a lot more of the multifamily style living, a little more of an urban area in that condition. Then your class D neighborhoods are probably the places that are going to be a little bit lower of the income bracket in this space. Probably people you might see more people that are on housing assistance or various programs in the section. Also in this area, you're probably going to see an increase in what your crime rates are going to be in those class D neighborhoods. So once again, that's just a very loose way that we can kind of talk about neighborhoods. Like I said, you're not going to, this is completely my opinion on kind of what those, that picture that I'm trying to paint for you in those neighborhoods are. I like kind of those C, C plus type neighborhoods that are kind of on their way to becoming that B, B minus neighborhoods. So I really like a place where people that are currently renters that take great care of their home, that are really looking to become those homeowners soon, that really kind of value nice neighborhoods and parks and good schools and safety. Those are really the sweet spot that I personally like to buy in.
That's really smart, because obviously there's a price differential as you move between classes as well.
Correct. Correct.
So Becky, are all your properties in the New York City area?
No, I also own properties in the Dominican Republic.
Okay, cool. So that, and you had the advantage
like I said,
your husband knows about that, those areas, knows where's a good place, where are some good deals, some people he can trust.
That he didn't really have too much help there, because he actually left the Dominican Republic right before his 18th birthday.
Oh,
so
okay.
really kind of hadn't gone into that world of networking and connections and so much, but
Right.
Absolutely, yes, I had an advantage here. He probably knew some neighborhoods a little bit better, or at least even going back now as an adult, he still had spent more time in the Dominican Republic than he, even to this day, than he has lived in the United States. So what was helpful there was that he still has an idea of kind of going back, being like, well, this block isn't really so good. The next block might be good. Even though it's changed since he left 10 years ago, that's still something that he can kind of look around and be like, hey, this is good, kind of that's not good.
Yeah.
What's also great is that since he is Dominican, clearly has a command of the Spanish language. So that just came in helpful when having to make phone calls, understand realtors, understand documents, legal process, all that. So that absolutely came in handy.
Yeah,
The other
absolutely.
thing, Chris, that happened here that worked out in our favor is we were actually supposed to buy our first property in the Dominican Republic, and it was actually new construction, okay? Now, you might have heard of something called Caribbean Time. Caribbean Time is where things just move a little bit different than they do in a New York minute, okay? So we were waiting for this property in the Caribbean to finally be completed, where then that rest of the balance is owed on that property. And that was something we planned on paying in cash. But since it was delayed by like 9 months, we were actually buying another property in the United States that is now worth almost $1 million. When we explained to our New York mortgage broker that, hey, actually, we got to go pay 70 grand to pay off the balance of that property in the Dominican Republic, he almost lost his mind. Because he was like, no, 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 we are just about to close on this $1 million property. You cannot send $70,000 to the Dominican Republic. So the only thing that we were able to do was, since my husband is a dual citizen, the best solution we came up with was to actually take out a short-term mortgage on the property in the Dominican Republic as a Dominican citizen, then close on the property in New York. So we did not impact our numbers and the closing there in the United States. And then once we closed there, then we paid off the mortgage in the Dominican Republic. Because our mortgage lender was very concerned that that was just going to be kind of a red flag,
red flag
here a
yeah.
week
Banks
before
don't
closing,
like stuff like that. Yeah.
That we're sending 70 grand internationally. Right.
Were they drug
our
dealers? What's going on
underwriter,
here, right?
our underwriter did not like that
Right.
at all. So what, it was very much in our favor that my husband is a dual citizen, and we were able then to take that mortgage on the property just until we got past the closing.
Yeah, there are a lot of complexities. Have you thought about buying properties in other parts of the United States or other countries?
I absolutely have. Actually, even between when I was doing kind of that research phase, as I kind of mentioned earlier on in the episode here, trying to figure out kind of what way I can purchase another property as soon as possible, there were absolutely other states, other markets out there that were absolutely fantastic. I think one big thing that I learned about real estate over the years is that there are deals everywhere. There really are. There are, in regardless of what the economy is, there have been, I've bought in great markets, poor markets, even just in the past few years that I have, right? So people that have been doing it even longer have seen even more different types of markets than I have. But there are always deals. So you can find them in all 50 states. They're all there. You just actually find them. So what was interesting was I was very interested in growing my portfolio in other states, but I just keep finding deals in New York. And I personally, not everybody does, I personally love buying in New York, because I can command much higher rents and much better cash flow.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what the name of the game is for me, is really that cash flow.
Yeah. Well, and there is something to be said for a market that you know, that you're comfortable in, that you can. And I mean, I too love being able to visit my properties, drive by my properties, you know, like you don't necessarily want to have to get on a plane every time you want to sort of feel cool. Like, oh, look, I just happen to be driving down the street and there's my house. Oh, you know.
I own three multifamilies and a parking lot on the same street.
Yeah, just keep little by little.
That's
keep
actually
taking
nice.
Over the neighborhood, right?
Right. A lot of the owners on the street know that my husband and I are buying properties. They like that we're young and kind of what we're building. So they tend to come to us and tell us, hey, I think this person's selling. We're able to find tenants that way. I've had tenants that have moved across the street, that have had families that have now grown, and we've been able to keep them in our rental business by just saying, hey, that's so fantastic on the new beat. When you need a third bedroom, I got another place for you across the street.
Yeah.
They know that they're going to get they know what type of landlord I am. They know what type of property we run. It's been great to keep, when you find a good tenant, keep a good tenant. So it's been really great to be able to have them grow with us as landlords.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What do you think is your favorite part of being a lady landlord?
I think my favorite part is knowing that somebody is happy in their own home. I feel like you hear so many of these bad stories about like, oh, but it's too cold in my apartment. The landlord won't turn the heat up, or oh, you know, there's this leak under the sink, or oh, the floorboard kind of like creaks, whatever it may be. That just, those little things can make somebody happier. Now, do I go and am I going to change out every little floorboard in an 1800, you know, in a 200-year-old house? No, I'm not. But those little things, to really have somebody to be like, hey, I'm really happy where I live, is really, really rewarding. And really trusting we're going to be there for safety, for any concerns that they really need, is really rewarding.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So how do you help other women to become landlords? I'm assuming that that's part of your, you know, part of your jam.
Yeah. So back, you might remember March 2020, a lot of the world kind of shut down at that point in time. My husband was one of those people that unfortunately was laid off due to all the closures and work. And he kind of came home and was like, I don't know what we're going to do. We're down an income stream. Lost my job today. And I was like, oh my God, we have to buy more rental property. And he was like, no, babe. I lost my job. I lost my income. And I was like, exactly. This is why we need to buy more real estate. We cannot count on corporate America to take care of us. He is like shaking his head. Like, what is this? You know, what is she thinking? What is that looking like? And I just kind of said like, no, like that really is something that I think is going to make a world of difference for us moving forward. So what we ended up doing was I ended up starting a Facebook group called Lady Landlords. And I literally was just like, some other person has to be thinking like me. I just sat back and I just waited. And then at a point I was like, all right, like I was wrong. Like, this is not like, there's nobody else out there doing this. Nobody else is thinking like this, like me. And then I was wrong. All of a sudden, women started joining and joining and joining. We now have over 45,000 women that have joined Lady Landlord since 2020.
Amazing.
So we now are the hub for educational resources. So we do trainings and workshops, and we have a course that helps walk you through how to do it. We now have a mentorship so women can support other women. We now do mastermind calls together. All of those different things, because to me, I just think back to what it was after I decided in that first closing room, I wanted to buy more property and having everybody tell me no. And I hated it. Yeah. So my goal now is to make sure that another woman's journey is just that much easier than mine was. So yeah, we are now the educational hub for that.
Nice. That's fantastic. So Becky, our time is flying by. I'm sorry. I've kept you so long. Can you, is there anything you wish I would have asked you that I haven't asked you?
I will throw this one at you. What is the thing that I wish I knew before I got started in real estate investing? And this is a very, very common answer that you're going to hear from every successful real estate investor, which is, I wish I had started sooner.
Oh yeah.
100%. So to anybody else that's listening to your episode right now, that's on the fence, or not sure that's right for them, or not sure how to get started, go do it. Take action. Decide today that if this is right for you, that you're going to go and you're going to ask somebody, hey, how can I get started in real estate investing? You're going to go and you're going to put a comment down on this podcast and be able to reach out and say like, hey, how can I get started too? Or what's the next best step for me? Or how do I determine if this is right for me? Because every single day that you wait, there is a cost that you are losing by waiting to buy real estate.
You're absolutely right. That's fantastic. I should have asked you that question. I'm glad you asked it for me.
There you go.
Awesome.
Happy to help.
So Becky, how can people reach you? How can they sign up for your training, your live training in March? And what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Sure. For anyone that identifies as female, head on over to Facebook and search for Lady Landlords. Come join us in the community. Great place just to be around so many thousands of other women that are also wanting to do something similar to you. So head over to Facebook there, search for Lady Landlords. That's the best place to find me. Otherwise, shoot me a message over on Instagram. You can find me at the Becky Nova. So that's the best place that you'll be able to get in touch there. Once again, all genders are able to follow me on Instagram. I put a lot of great content out there. And thanks, Chris, for reminding me. I got a free training. I do a monthly free training for our community. It's a fantastic resource. I take the most popular topic that our lady landlords are talking about that month and actually create an entire training and webinar all around that. So it's early March right now. I am doing it later this month. So head over to lady-landlords.com and you'll be able to sign up for our training there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Becky. This has been great. I love all the things you've shared with us. And thank you, listener, for listening. And who do you know who's been thinking about becoming a landlord and putting it off? Why don't you send them this episode so that they can hear Becky's wisdom and hopefully jump off the darn fence? And have a great week.